All right, folks, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
And it is the 20th.
And Psychic Thorne has a red hot crystal ball.
Yes, sir. We got a big fight this week. Speaking of crystal balls, it's the big boxing fight of the century, if you believe the promoters, Canelo Alvarez versus Gennady Golovkin. So we'll see. I like.
I know a lot of boxing people are like, "Oh, this is the real fight."
We'll see. That's all I got to say. But interesting new trend to talk about too. I'm sure Tony will love this. You know, as much as we talk about how bad MMA fighters are with boxing, sometimes seems like more and more of these guys are coming out of the woodwork, and girls, saying they're going to go from MMA to boxing, and one of them is a guy I met personally and didn't even know I was meeting at the time. Gabriel Gonzaga in Worcester is going to be going over to boxing officially. Not talking about it, doing it. So actually, I'm going to think about trying to get to that event. It's obviously not too far away, and he's a Massachusetts guy, so it's cool. It'll be cool. But anyway, he's not the only one. Jose Aldo, also another guy with Brazilian roots, talking about once he finishes up his UFC contract, he wants to go solely into boxing. And, of course, another lady trying to find good opponents and having trouble, Cyborg. Chris Justino there is talking about going into boxing as well, so... All these MMA fighters saying MMA is not cutting it. We're going to boxing. But I guess that tells you the health of the sport there.
Well, I think it's the money factor. You know, these guys have big names, and they figure they can pull off what the McGregor pulled off. They might not get the fight with Floyd Mayweather of the world, but if they can go over to the boxing field, I mean, you got guys out there like the two guys fighting this weekend, Canelo Alvarez, Triple G, could bring in a lot of money, you know? And... You know, they won't be getting the 80% of it like he normally does.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've been talking about it for months, but I think especially in the UFC, you have a trend now where it's corporate ownership, and Dana White is still the mouthpiece. And these guys were already getting sick of Dana White under Fertitta control, and now he's under corporate control. And I just think a lot of these fighters are just saying, you know, what's the point of sticking around in this place when this is how we're getting treated? And it's just like a continuation of an attitude that the show is the most important thing. You have to put on a show, not just win, to keep your contract. You know, you have to give up all your rights and your likenesses, royalties and all this other stuff just to fight in the octagon. Is it all really worth it in the long run, you know, for the paychecks that you're getting? And a lot of these fighters are saying no, and that's why you're ending up with a lot of these fighters over in Bellator rather than extending their UFC contracts. Not a lot of huge names, but enough to make it look like, hey, you know, now there's a competitive situation going on here. But nobody really expected boxing to come out of the woodwork and take fighters like this away. And maybe that's why, one of the reasons why Dana White was so reluctant to put some of his fighters on the undercard, now that you look back at it, is that maybe he doesn't want to lose anybody to boxing. But it's crazy. Side effects.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised to see Stipe trying to make a move. Because right now, from what I understand, he's trying to renegotiate his contract with the UFC. So, we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at the same time, you know, you wonder how the UFC will respond as far as, hey, maybe we need to light a fire under these guys to show them that we still care about them and make some changes to show we're committed to the fighters. Because it could have almost the effect of a fighters union. That's all these fighters are talking about. Oh, Conor made $100 million. I got to go box. But at the same time, you have a situation where a former UFC fighter get killed in a matchup in Edmonton. They just actually had the UFC event up there, and they pushed off the final report and all that until after the UFC left town, believe it or not. But this guy was a former UFC fighter, and he went into a boxing match. He was overmatched, and he got clobbered, and he died. And it's just, you know, it just shows you the risks involved are so severe. If you go in there from a mixed martial arts background and you don't take enough time to train, or you don't, you know, have the familiarity with the sport that somebody who has a great record and is great, you know, matched up against you, thinking all that MMA experience translates to boxing when sometimes it doesn't. So, I don't know. Conor McGregor did seem to make it way more competitive than a lot of people thought he would, but at the same time, you know, it just goes to show you there's a different style to the different sports that, you know, one person can't cross over to the other that easily. It takes a lot of commitment. But we'll see what happens. And, you know, we still have some crossovers to the other side, too. Heather Hardy is one of them. So, she's actually, I believe, going to be part of a broadcast team coming up with Showtime with our old buddy John Scully. Saw that the other day.
Nice!
So, we'll see him. But anyway, we got a big fight coming up this weekend in boxing. Canelo Alvarez fighting Gennady Golovkin, and these guys are kind of arguably the pound-for-pound best in the middleweight division. And some belts on the line, and some clashing styles. I mean, Canelo is not your typical Mexican fighter, but he is very aggressive. He's a kind of a clubbing inside fighter more than anything, I think. But Gennady Golovkin just hits you from so many different angles. And he can sneak up on you. He's had some long fights. Or he can just take you out in the first few rounds if he just gets a few shots to the ribs or connects with the chin. You know, it could go either way with these guys. I don't really think it will go 12 because these guys are going to be so amped up for this thing. But, you know, if it does go 12, I like Gennady either way. I think he is just too good at this point.
Okay, here's the question for you guys. If it does go 12, can Triple G win a decision in Las Vegas against the money guy who's bringing all the money into that town? What do you guys think?
That's a great question, Tom. Obviously, you know, you have the adage, you know, these are two guys that are legitimate champions. So it's not like you got to beat the champion. That's throw that out the window. And I think that's bullshit anyway. But now, going here, obviously this is going to be a Canelo crowd. You know, he's, you know, Triple G, obviously, yeah, he does have, you know, Mexican ties, and he is popular with that demographic, but not as much as Canelo is. And Canelo, you're right, is more of the cash cow. So, if it is within a round or so, I mean, that could be, you know, a point of concern for Triple G. Now, I actually, speaking on this fight, I was at the gym tonight before I came here. I have two friends that I talk boxing with almost every night. So I see the first guy, Adonis, and, you know, they got a big fight this weekend. He goes, this is a real fight. And he's, you know, he's ordering this one. And we were talking about it. I said, Adonis, what do you think? And very knowledgeable boxer, and he goes, Triple G. He goes, Canelo's never fought somebody that hits that hard. Canelo has, and by the way, all great points. He has a tendency to fade in rounds. Triple G's got a great chin. You know, Canelo's knocked out some guys. Yeah, I'll give you that, but never of Triple G's caliber. Great points. Triple G takes him late. Okay, great points. Then I saw my other friend, Chris, also very knowledgeable boxing. Chris, hey, Tone, can't wait for this fight. Hey, Chris, what do you think? He goes, I think Canelo takes it and takes it easily over 12 rounds. I said, really? He goes, yeah. He goes, Canelo is a natural counterpuncher. So he struggled against the guys like your Floyd Mayweathers, like your Arisandi Lara's, your Austin Trout, guys that, you know, kind of stayed away from him, where he does better against your guys like James Kirkland that come right at you, the Carlos Baldemirs of the world. You know, those are the guys that he just excels against. So he's like, I think Canelo outboxes him easy. I said, okay, so I did my workout, and as I was getting ready to leave, I saw those two guys were talking to each other. So me being the guy that I am, I walked up and I said, you said Triple G, you said Canelo, now you guys got to argue it out amongst yourselves. And then they went into a debate, and I was long gone, but they were still going at it, you know? And I said, you know what, guys, I'm going to take the high road, and I'll call it a draw, and I walked out.
That's like the ref coming in and say, all right, ready, go. All right, I'm out. I'm out of here.
Yep. I'm actually going to try to work on something tonight, maybe tomorrow night, at least get you guys to report. It's been crazy this week, and then I had a couple dinner functions I had to attend. You know, the been in demand.
All right. I kind of figured you were really busy, because we didn't get your round by round breakdown. So I thought, you know, you were probably pretty jammed up this week.
You know, after tonight's conversation, it actually really came to me, and I read a couple other friends of mine. These are all boxing guys. A couple of these guys actually went to the Frazier statue dedication with me a couple years ago, and I was kind of, you know, reading some of their threads and everything. And the one guy made a fantastic point. He said by Canelo bulking up a little bit and getting a little bit thicker, that actually is going to hinder him more than helps him, because Canelo is not a speed demon, and you know, his advantages in this fight would have been his speed, his boxing ability, his counterpunching ability. You're looking at a guy in Golovkin that's been knocked out. You got a guy in Canelo that's got a great chin. But Canelo's probably his biggest weakness, if you go back to some of his fights with, you know, Austin Trout, Arisandi Lara, even against Floyd Mayweather, he had times in there, like, that especially later in the fight, he faded a little bit. And the last round, he was really struggling. So for a while, I was starting to go towards Canelo. And what I was seeing was, you know, him boxing, him counterpunching against Triple G's aggression, and maybe winning like 7 rounds to 5, almost 6-5-1, literally maybe by a point, you know. And I disagree with Rich because of these guys' ability and their durability, and their, not just their ability, but their durability. I can see this fight going 12 rounds. I think it's going to be one of those fights where it's a grueling war of attrition, and it will be won in the last 3 rounds. It could be a stoppage where maybe somebody does not come out from their corner, maybe for, like, say, the 11th or 12th round. If that happens, I see that more being Canelo being stopped in that manner. But right now, what really came to me before this call started was Canelo up 5-4 after 9 rounds, and Triple G just working the last 3 rounds to win 7-5. 115-113.
All right. Well, that's specific. Jesus. I didn't know I had to have a score if it was a unanimous decision and all that. I don't know. I'm looking at BoxRec right now. And I look at the opponents, the recent opponents. And obviously, we know Julio Cesar Chavez didn't bring much of a fight. Junior's obviously not so much of a chip off the old block lately. And the fight before that is basically a year ago, the 17th of September 2016. Liam Smith, he won by KO, and Liam come in at 23-0. And then before that, Amir Khan, who was a weight mismatch, and then that was a knockout, and then Miguel Cotto by unanimous decision before that. But you look at Gennady Golovkin, I like his opposition a little bit better lately. He's gone in against Daniel Jacobs, his only unanimous decision in a long time. Before that, he knocked out Kell Brook, 36-0 coming into that fight. Dominic Wade before that, 18-0, knocked him out. David Lemieux, 34-2, TKO before that. So he's just been mowing him down. And I don't know. I like the...
And the thing about, you know, Triple G, he is a guy that he can hurt you with either hand, and he can cause one punch damage with his hand. Where Canelo, yeah, he's had two fights, probably his two highlight reel knockouts, James Kirkland and Amir Khan, were one-punch knockouts. Even Carlos Baldomir was a one-punch knockout. He's an iron jaw fighter. But Baldomir, at the same time, was past his prime. You figure he had, I think that fight was maybe 2010, and he had his string of success in 05, 06. But he was never, he was in the right place at the right time. He got an unmotivated Zab Judah. He got a past his prime Arturo Gatti. And then he got lost every round to Floyd Mayweather. He walked right into an Alvarez shot, got knocked out. You had Kirkland walk right into him, got decimated. Amir Khan, glazed jaw, you know, and then he went down and out. But for the most part, Triple G is more of the one-punch guy. He's a guy that can decimate you with one shot and boom, it be over. Where Alvarez is a guy that's more going to, you know, wear you down.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, Alvarez is a big target. Like you said, if he gets the more weight on, it's probably going to be a disadvantage for him because he's already got a bigger head than Golovkin. So I think he's just going to be a big plodding target in this fight. And he can overpower somebody with less skill than him. But the thing about Gennady is not just his power, but the sharpness of his angles when he hits people with shots. And the thing I hate about watching Saul Alvarez fight is he just overpowers mismatched guys every fight I've seen him in. And it's just like he uses his bulk and his ability to kind of swarm people at the right time. But I don't think he's going to be able to do that against a guy with enough ring generalship like Gennady Golovkin to avoid that and be quicker and more sharp with their angles. And the other thing about Saul I don't like is he doesn't really turn over his punches. He slaps so many of his punches. And it's like one of those habits that you have in the amateurs that, you know, if you don't get rid of, you don't stick with the amateurs. And I don't know how he could get to the professional level and still do that. And I see a lot of his fights, he does not turn his punches over and doesn't get the leverage that he should with the weight that he has. That's why he doesn't have a lot of knockouts compared to Gennady. So.
Oh, okay, so if his movement is kind of inefficient, and Triple G has a very good economy of movement, very technical, what does that say about the cardio of both guys? What does that say that maybe Triple G doesn't seem to get tired that much? Canelo takes a lot of breaks because of maybe a variety of reasons. So maybe his technique is not that perfect. And now he's coming in heavier. That's my big question about him. What's his gas tank going to be?
We'll see. Maybe I'll be wrong. Maybe it's going to be a close unanimous decision. But I don't think it's going to be the fight of the century. That's for sure. I think it will be a good fight. Much better than Conor versus Floyd. But believe it or not, it's not the best fight of the weekend if you look at all the other fights going on. This is an absolute huge weekend for boxing. And then just this card alone, you have a couple other undefeated sets of fighters going at each other. In the co-main event, we got Joseph Diaz at featherweight, 24-0, fighting Rafael Rivera, who's 25-0-2. And then you got Oscar's cousin, Diego De La Hoya, 19-0, fighting for a little title, the NABF Super Bantamweight title against Randy Caballero, who is 24-0, so... couple undefeated guy there. guys there. You got Ryan Martin, lightweight, 19-0, fighting Francisco Rojo, who's 20-2. And that one's for some regional titles. Vacant WBA Intercontinental lightweight title and WBC Continental America's lightweight title. And there's a lot going on in the UK as well, but there's an interesting one down here in Lincoln, Rhode Island. Welterweight main events. Jimmy Williams, 14-0-1 against Juan Rodriguez Jr., who's 13-4. That's for the WBC United States welterweight title. Let's get Lincoln Saturday. We got some Jesus fights this week. But Jesus is actually fighting for a title in one of them, so we'll get to that in a minute. But tomorrow night, over on ESPN2, and from Las Vegas at the MGM Grand, we've got Oscar De La Hoya, Golden Boy Promotions card. Claudio Marrero, 22-1, fighting Jesus M. Rojas, 25-1-2, for the interim WBA World Featherweight title. Can Jesus be the World Featherweight champ? We'll find out. Rashidi Ellis also on this card at welterweight. He is 18-0, fighting Juan Carlos Abreu, who's 19-3-1. And we got Horacio Garcia, 32-3-1, fighting Diul Olguin, who is 12-6-3 at featherweight. It's just Friday night. Down in Rosemont, Illinois, Mike Lee at light heavyweight, continuing his comeback to the sport, 19-0. Fighting Aaron Quattrochi, who is 10-1-1. And on the undercard, we have Vitaly Kopylenko at middleweight, 26-1, fighting Travis Scott, who's 19-3. What else we got going on? And if we still haven't even talked about results yet. I mean, we've got 2 weeks back, but just going back 1 week, we got a lot of results to talk about. But we'll get to that in a minute. Here's one from the Philippines for the IBF World Light Flyweight title. Milan Malindo, 36-2, fighting Heki Budler, who's 31-2. And then the co-main event is John Riel Casimero, 24-3, fighting Jonas Sultan, who's 13-3. And Arthur Villanueva at bantamweight also on the card. He is 30-2, fighting Richie Mapranum, who is 31-6. That's over in the Philippines on Saturday. As I said, the UK has some of the biggest fights this week, and here is pretty much the biggest card, I think, in London. Billy Joe Saunders in the main event at middleweight, 24-0, fighting Willie Monroe Jr., who is 21-2. And this one's for the WBO World Middleweight title. We've also got Anthony Yard at light heavyweight, 12-0, fighting Norbert Nemesipati, who is 25-6. And a couple other undefeated guys going at each other at super welterweight. Joe Pigford, how's that for a boxing name? 13-0, fighting Kieran Smith, who's 10-0. And it wouldn't be a UK fight without some opponents on this card. Here's a guy, Kevin McCauley. His record is 13-151-11.
Wow, Jesus. Unbelievable.
Wow. Lucky 13 wins, though. I like that. It'd be pretty bad if he was 0-100 and something. Alright. There's another UK one here somewhere. We'll get to that, I guess. There is the UK. Here is it. Here it is. Alright. Callum Smith fighting Eric Skoglund at super middleweight. 22-0 is Callum Smith. Skoglund is 26-0. That's from Liverpool, United Kingdom, on Saturday. I believe that's part of the World Boxing Super Series thing they're doing again. super middleweights and light heavyweights. But yeah, both guys undefeated, and a couple other super middleweights on the card as well. Zach Parker, 12-0, fighting Luke Blackledge, who's 23-4-2. And we got Martin Murray, also at super middleweight, 35-4-1, fighting Armin Torosian, 18-3-1. And as I said, we got to talk about results. Going back to the 13th, we had a win. Shingo Wake beating Boonsum Lam Theory. The title's on the line there, but one of the first guys I ever wrote about for any website, Brian Hawaiian Punch Valoria, got a big win.
Yeah, I remember.
Over Miguel Cartagena. He's still battling it out there. But the big win was, speaking of World Boxing Super Series, Alexander Usyk beating Marco Huck on Saturday.
Wow.
Big win there. So he advances in that tournament. And I'm going to click on that just to make sure I get the exact result. But we also had Kanat Islam beating Brandon Cook. And one of the big ones from last Friday, David Benavidez beating Ronald Gavriel. And what I believe was a pretty big upset. So, lots of action. We still have some Saturday fights, I believe. So, let's go to the next page. By the way, Conor McGregor is being sued while we're waiting for this BoxRec schedule here. You know how Manny Pacquiao got sued after the Floyd Mayweather fight? Well, maybe it's a trend. Conor McGregor is being sued, but not for anything related to boxing. He apparently being sued for throwing a Monster Energy drink. Making me believe he's probably not going to be sponsored by them anytime soon. But he hit a guy in the back who was apparently claiming severe bodily injury, and this is like a big serious lawsuit now. He's severely injured. He's asking for a total of $95,000 based on this guy's $15 million revenue from just the fight with Diaz, which was where the thing happened. And he is claiming that he sustained just below $5,000 in medical bills due to the injury from the throwing of the can. And first it was water bottles, and then he supposedly picked up at least one can. And that was the can that could have been a $95,000 can of Monster plus legal fees. We'll see. But I don't think Connor's worried about it. I think he's tipping his the crew that's driving his yacht more than that right now. Apparently he's still chilling in a...
Reminds me of an old Eddie Murphy stand-up skit when he was talking about they were in the club and a fight breaks out and he goes, "I'm getting sued by everybody." He goes, "People that weren't even involved in the fight were suing me." And it was like, because they know I have money. And the one guy's like, "Yeah, I wasn't in the fight, but a strobe light got knocked off, and it had a weird effect, and I sprained my eye, so I need like $1 million for my sprained eyes." That's what it reminds me of.
Right? Ridiculous. But anyway, I believe the guy could have got injured, but, $5,000 in medical bills all the way up to $95,000? I don't know. Yeah, he's obviously trying to get some money out of it. I bet it'll be settled pretty quick, and wouldn't bat an eye at that. But actually, Conor McGregor is chilling on a yacht right now. He's apparently taking a two-week sabbatical out there in the ocean off Spain somewhere. He rented a serious yacht, and he's out there with his friends and family. And they've already got pictures of him getting all tanked out there, hanging out on a big boat, living the life. Waiting for his next move. So The big hype is him doing a trilogy fight with Nate Diaz, but Nate Diaz is talking about wanting 20 or 30 million for that to happen. So good luck, UFC, making that deal. This is what happens. Anyway, Marco Huck was TKO'd by Alexander Usyk. So 11 of his 13 wins now from KO or TKO.
Did anybody see the brutal knockout on Chocolito Roman Gonzalez suffered last week? I seen the highlights.
I believe I posted something about it, but did not see it.
You know what? He was a legit, you know, top guy, you know, for a couple of years. But when you're, you know, at 105 pounds and you move up, you know, those few pounds, they make a big difference. And you know, so, and the fact that, you know, he's a guy that he could have aged quickly. I'm not sure what happened, but a couple of rough hooks definitely happened. I know that.
Well, here's another one to talk about. In a little town of Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, it's actually going to be Fox Sports 1 next Tuesday. It's going to be at the Sands Bethlehem Event Center. Main event, Mario Barrios, 19-0 against Nate Nelson, who is 13-3. And then co-main events, light heavyweights Earl Newman, 10-0, and Paul Parker, 8-2. And then finally another undefeated pair of fighters going at it. Featherweight Stephen Fulton, 11-0, and Adam Lopez, who's 8-0. Good stuff. And then, of course, we've got the return to UFC to talk about. But one more big boxing story, and by big, I mean big. I mean $22 million big, which is slightly less than I was sued for. But this is serious stuff. We've talked a lot about this significant event in the history of boxing in New York State in particular. Magomed Abdusalamov, he and his family were awarded $22 million last Friday in a personal injury case due to the brain damage he suffered following a 2013 fight. And supposedly it's the biggest personal injury settlement in state history. He was 36 years old when he lost to Mike Perez on November 2nd, 2013 by unanimous decision. And 4 years after that, he is still paralyzed on his right side, unable to walk, and his speech has been reduced to mumbling. But after the fight, obviously his family filed a lawsuit and charged recklessness, gross negligence, and medical malpractice by the New York State Athletic Commission. And you might have heard a lot of hubbub about an insurance policy that every fighter has to have in New York State, which makes all but the big promotions, able to hold significant events there, because most small promoters can't afford that insurance for every fighter. But it's like significant brain injury insurance or something like that that every fighter has to get now. And I didn't even realize this until I read this article. It's all wrapped up into this case. So they are obviously making changes already to prevent this from ever happening again. But his wife said, "I would trade all the money just to bring Mago back as his ward, back as he was, but that's not how it works. I cannot buy the happiness we had." So, sad case, but, crazy circumstances behind that, and he deserved to pay that $22 million, because it wasn't just a fluke event that, you know, boxing is dangerous, and this guy knew what he was getting into. Well, this was straight up, they didn't even have an ambulance to bring this guy to the hospital. They told him to get in the cab. I mean, it's just ridiculous. So I'm glad to hear that worked out for his family. But I just hope that he makes some kind of improvement over the years, or, you know, has some kind of quality in life moving forward. Anyway, UFC. It was in Rotterdam, Netherlands. Recently, we had Alexander Volkov versus Stefan Struve. And Volkov basically demolished Struve. Talk about horrible MMA boxing. Struve did not use his height at all. He needs to spend a couple days with, what's his name there, Teddy Atlas. Tell him how to use his length and his height as a stand-up striker, because Alexander Volkov, with his kickboxing background, just weathered the early storm and basically took Struve right into deep waters, got him tired, got him banged up. There were a couple times where Struve got punched in the face where you could tell he was just giving up, trying to hang in, trying to get to the end of the fight, and he did not make it. Got TKO'd. And it was pretty vicious. But that's what happens. That's what happens. We also had Sayar Bahadurzada beating Rob Wilkinson by TKO. That was in the second round. 3 minutes and 10 seconds into it. Marion Renon, a female fight there. She beat Talita Bernardo by TKO in the third round. Just 6 seconds left in that one. Leon Edwards beats Brian Barberina by unanimous decision. Darren Till also got a UD over Bojan Milikovic. Mirbek Taisumov beat Felipe Silva by knockout punch. 1 minute and 24 seconds into that fight. Michael Prezeris beat Mads Burnell by north-south choke in the third round. 1 minute and 26 seconds into that one. Rustam Khabilov beat Desmond Green by unanimous decision. Alexander Rakic beat Francimar Barroso by UD. Zabit Magomedsharipov. His name is so long that it goes right over his picture on Sherdog. Fighting Mike Santiago. Zabit beat him by rear naked choke there in the second round. 4 minutes and 22 seconds in. Abdul Karim Edilov beat Bojan Mihaljovic by TKO in the second round. 2 minutes and 32 seconds into that one. In the first fight, Thibault Goti beat Andrew Holbrook by knockout with just 32 seconds left in the first round. And then, of course, we got UFC Fight Night 116. Luke Rockhold taking on David Branch. Both of them got 3 losses. This is coming to us from Pittsburgh, Tony's favorite city in all of Philadelphia. I bet he's going to be outside trying to buy tickets because he loves MMA and Pittsburgh equally. anyway, Luke Rockhold, 15-3, fighting David Branch, 21-3. Also on the undercard, Mike Perry, 10-1, fighting Alex Reyes, who's 13-2. And here's a blast from the past. I haven't seen this guy in a while. Hector Lombard, 34-7-1, fighting Anthony Smith, 27-12. That's his record. And talk about a guy, he kind of reminds me of Chuck Congo, type of fighter. He's got all the physique in the world, but just not the type of skill you'd think he'd have to back it up. We thought he was going to just demolish people when he came to the UFC, and he's just been so back and forth. I'm actually surprised to see he's still under a UFC contract. Anyway. Gregor Gillespie, 9-0, fighting Jason Gonzalez, 11-3. Kamaru Usman, 10-1, fighting Sergio Moraes, 12-2 there. That should be a good fight. Justin Ledette, 8-0, fighting Azuna Anyanwu, who is 14-4. Olivier Aubin-Mercier, 9-2, fighting Tony Martin, who's 12-3. Daniel Spitz, 5-1, fighting Anthony Hamilton, 15-7. And Christoph Jutko, 19-2, fighting Uriah Hall, who is 12-8. Luke Sanders, in the second fight of the night, is 11-1, fighting Felipe Arantes, 18-8-1. And Gilbert Burns leads off the night, 11-2, against Jason Sago, who is 12-3. And that's pretty much it. I don't know. I don't know. Am I missing anything from the last 2 weeks? I'm probably going to kick myself in the head later and go, oh. Here's a story. Michael Bisping has actually encouraged George St. Pierre to take steroids for their fight. Absolutely no joke.
Wait.
Really?
Nice.
Isn't that nice? You should take steroids. But is it, that's actually supposedly one of the whole reasons why George St. Pierre left the sport, was because he wanted to make sure that there was testing, adequate testing systems in place before he ever came back. But then in a recent interview I read just the other day, he's apparently changed his mind now and said that he really left because he had some personal problems and he really wanted to improve himself and then come back. So, and he's also said that if he loses a fight, he retires from now on. So this is really do or die, literally. We'll see. I'd be surprised if it goes through. You know, it keeps getting pushed back. Anyway. You guys got anything else to add before we call it a quick wrap up?
Well, I mean, I don't know. What else can you say? I mean, that's the exciting part about it. I do want to let you guys know, and I do want to thank you first. I did not get the opportunity with the Phillies as I was hoping. I fill you guys in on that. I had originally, contacted them on their, email, their website through the contact us, which is a form. I tried to explain who I was because I'm, obviously so popular. Mm-hmm. words can only, really give you a general description. I mean, you guys know me, you guys have seen me, you guys have talked to me, you guys have seen my videos and stuff like that. And this contact me form was just basically words. That's all it was. So, tried to give the best description I could. They shot back to me saying, basically like, piss off, numbnuts. Who the hell are you? They didn't say it in those words, obviously. They kind of said, I'd like to do my birthday, that. They're like, well, we reserved this for the sale. 500 tickets or more to a game. And I'm like, you guys are in dead last place, the worst team in baseball. You're lucky to sell 500 tickets to a game. It was like, wait a minute. It was like, in playing chess, they came out with their king. And they gave me a counter because when they contacted me, it was by email. And I said, now I can actually email them and I can include pictures, which I did. I can include the link to the, the petition, which I did. I didn't hear anything, so I went back to him yesterday or the day or two ago, and I said, hey, I got a request, the opportunity to leave work if you want to do this. And I said, I am willing, if the first pick option is not available, to be involved in some way, whether that's, dance with the Philly Static, the team's mascot on the dugout, which they always get over. Whatever you want me to do, I'm willing to do. They sent me a response, which was actually kind of degrading. I'll put it that way. They're like, we stand by our decision. First pitch, have to sell 500 tickets. Go Phillies. I'm thinking, did you assholes even read what I sent to you? First of all, looking at the pictures, knowing basically you're getting me for free. And that's really an arrogant thing to say, but that was my mindset. And I was like, well, Dan, did you read that I offered any other services? So, I was at a dinner last night, and, I was a little annoyed, but I just got the email. I didn't know how to respond. I was like, I wanted to say something like, did you idiots even read my email? Thanks a lot, you jerks. I could have got you some tickets. Your team is so bad this year, you're barely selling any. But I said, let me bite my tongue a little bit. And today I sent a response, and I think it, in my eyes, was professional, basically telling them that I'm, not interested in coming to any other games this year. I lied because I'm going to an afternoon game next week just because I'm meeting a girl there, but they don't got to know that. Mm-hmm. So they'll probably see me, so I'm not going to be incognito. But I basically, said to them, I said, listen, sorry this wasn't able to work out. I would like to, the first pitch, I respect your decision and your policy. But I would have liked to have maybe done something else, maybe with the Fanatic or so on and so forth. And I said, you know, sorry we weren't able to work this out. I got to work now. I can't get out of work. It's too late. But hopefully we can maybe revisit something for next year. See you in Clearwater, which basically is piss on the rest of your season. Is what it is, you know, but sucks. But hey, if in my eyes, if maybe I annoyed somebody just a little bit, then I kind of, you know, did my goal.
Hey, what's the old cliche, Tony? Nothing ventured, nothing gained, right?
Thank you. Yeah, you know, it was like, now here's what my reputation is. Even I got to go to my main office tomorrow. I find out literally yesterday, like, yeah, what are you doing Friday? Why? Can you come to the city? I don't even have a desk in the city. We just moved our stations, and I'm there so infrequently, they didn't give me that on a desk. But fine. It's a good thing because I have to have my computer upgraded anyway. Whatever. So, no, originally it was, we had clients in the building, you have to wear business. Fine. I wear shirt and tie almost every day. Fridays, I wear my Hawaiian shirts from mid-March to mid-September, which the blow-off would be tomorrow. But they're like, no, it's got to be business. And they're like, wait, no, it's got to be, no, it's going to be corporate casual, you know, whatever. Okay, fine. I'll still think about going business, and I have a reason for it. My boss actually texts me tonight while I'm on this call with you saying, hey, you know we got clients tomorrow. You might want to kick back on the Hawaiian shirts. I said, oh, that's no problem. I'm going shirt and tie tomorrow anyway. What he doesn't know, it's a hot pink shirt with a flamingo tie. But that's business. And then I sent him a picture of today from the company where I'm located, the client that, you know, I'm located at. They had their company picnic today, and it was Aloha themed. Perfect for me, right? So I was wearing my pink t-shirt, black and pink flamingo shirt, and flamingo hat, you know, so wore that there, and then, you know, they were having fun. One girl tried to teach me the electric slide. I just couldn't get it. You know, I just could not get it. It was all going well till some idiot had to request the Macarena. Huh. Yeah, it was me. I led the Macarena dance dressed as a flamingo. That's I don't know. You know, something ain't right with me. I'm sorry.
It's all right, man. It's all right. So I got your answer for the Phillies. You just have to basically make the mascot that you've developed into a trademark thing, and start making money off of it for yourself, and then they'll want in on it later on.
Yeah, very true. Very true. The only thing I'm worried about doing something like that is because I am using their logos.
Yeah. Well, just modify their logo slightly. That's all you have to do.
Yeah, true.
You could think of something. Bring a Polaroid to the games and charge $5 a picture.
Yeah.
Everybody, like, what's that line over there? And the guy that emailed you would be like, "Oh shit, that's the Tony line."
Yeah, you know what? You know what? You know what's funny? And like I said, I've been doing this at the games for what you say. I started in 2012, so this is my sixth season doing it with the whole outfit and all that. And there are some games I'll do up to 200 photos. And people ask me for different things. Hey, can you do this? Hey, can you do that? Can you? You know, I'm looking at the game right now, and they got these idiots out on the field dancing with the Fanatic. And I'm like, oh, I can't do that? Come on. Get out of here, you bums. The one girl's fat. Oh, I shouldn't say that. That's politically incorrect. But I do this at spring training every year. It's been a gimmick of mine, and I enjoy it. I meet a lot of people. So the one year I'm down there, and I got in and out of breakfast pretty quick, so I went down before the doors opened just to watch some of their young minor league pitchers their bullpen sessions, just so I can, hey, scout our young up-and-coming prospects. Actually, the one guy that watched through a bullpen session when he was in Double A is actually pitching right now. on the majors. Got a 9-0 lead too. So I'm there, and people are coming over. I'm doing a picture here, picture there, and two security guards come over down in Clearwater, and they're like, "Excuse me, we got to talk to you." "Yeah? Are you soliciting?" I said, "Am I doing what?" They're like, "Are you charging for photos?" And I literally dropped my arms, and I looked at him, and I was like, bit my tongue, you know, gave out a sigh, and I said, "Listen to me. I've been doing this gimmick here in Clearwater. This is, it was like my 4th or 5th year, I don't remember. And I said, I've never taken a single dime, and nor will I." People say to me all the time, "Yeah, you ought to charge people." I'm like, "Yeah, first of all, I'm not doing that. You know, because I'm not licensed to do it. And the second thing is, I enjoy it. You know, a kid come up to me, 'Hey, sir, can I get a photo?'" Of course. You know, people bring up to me, like, "Hey, will you take a picture with my son or my daughter?" You know, sometimes these kids are little. I'll high-five the kids. Hey, ask kids, "Are you enjoying the game?" It's a nice thing. Sometimes I slur those words, but, you know, I can just say I boxed. I got brain damage. So, kind of sucked. But, hey, it is what it is. Rich, by the way, I went to Luke Bryan last week. I got to send some of the photos of me on the mechanical bull.
Nice.
Yeah. Here's the other funny thing. We go down there. I get down there at like 2 o'clock, go to the one bar that I, you know, also, if I can, if it's all on online, I'll get the link for you guys. I don't think it's been shown yet, but I filmed the commercial last week. We weren't on the air. But last Tuesday or Wednesday, I went down right by the Philadelphia Sports Complex in full costume, and it was a thing for, like, the ultimate Philadelphia sports fans. And they see me dressed up as Apollo, and I'm walking to the stage to get interviewed. They're like, "Hey, can you throw a few punches like Apollo?" "Oh, can I?" So I start whipping out a couple combinations. They're like, "You really know what you're doing, don't you?" I said, "Yeah, 23 years, I better." So I filmed that. It was pretty cool. I don't know when it's going to air, but I'm excited for that. So a couple days later, I'm down at Xfinity, having a few drinks, and, "Hey, let's get on the mechanical bull, look like a moron." And then I got my cowboy boots on and my big hat and camo shirt. I tuck my jeans into my boots, and I don't care what people say if it looks wrong, that's what I do. So I go to the park where the game is. My cousins were going to be there because they got the tickets from me. They were already there. We all had a drink or so. We go in. Concert starting. I'm pretty drunk. I took the train and the subway there, and my older cousin, well, the older of the two sisters, they're both younger than me, the 33-year-old, she runs out of there because she apparently drank too much, and now she's getting sick. Her boyfriend runs after her, and her younger sister, who's almost 25, starts panicking, because this girl's, like, scared of her own shadow, panicking. And I'm like, "What's wrong?" She's starting to cry. "My sister left me. I don't know what I'm going to do." I said, "What you're going to do is you're going to ride the train home like you took it down, because I'm on the same line as you." And I said, "If we were on different trains, I would have said, 'Nope, you're taking the train with me, because you have the daily pass, doesn't matter where you're going.' And we would Uber it back to my house, you crash over, and then I drive you home tomorrow morning. There's no problem." And then she said, "But we're on the same train." "Yeah, but I don't know where to get off." I said, "You get off at Ambler. It's not that hard." And she's like, "But I don't want to be alone." "You're not going to be alone. I'm on the train. Do you get off before me?" I said, "I'm the last stop." "Yeah, but are you before me?" Yeah, exactly. I'm the drunk one.
Yeah.
I'm like, "I'm the last stop." You know? That was an interesting conversation.
So did Luke Bryan throw beers at you?
No, I was in the stands, but they said what he did do, and I don't really remember this, because I remember he was moving around so much. There was a woman there, I guess she's in a wheelchair, so it was, you know, I guess kind of hard to see her from where we were, because, you know, he would pop on and off the stage and move around a lot. But I guess this woman had a sign, says, you know, "I had ALS," which, you know, that's what we don't survive. But she's, I think they said, like, the second longest survivor, maybe in the state of Pennsylvania or wherever. But she survived ALS for, like, 25 years. She has no use in her legs anymore. But she had a sign there that says, "Luke, my bucket list is to have a beer with you." And he actually got off the stage, cracked 2 beers open, drank a beer with her.
That's awesome.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, they are moved by that kind of stuff. I saw one of my concerts that I went to. There's like a 12-year-old girl that got brought up on a stage by Lady Antebellum. So that was classy. She had a sign through like three acts before that that said, "Oh, please ask me to come on stage and sing with you. I want to sing with you." And I was like laughing at her at first, and then right in the middle of one of their big hits, there goes Lady Antebellum, bring her up. And she was actually pretty good, you know, so... Maybe the next New Hampshire American Idol or whatever they do nowadays. The Voice winner. We'll see. Have to keep an eye out for it.
I'll say the one thing that years ago, first my friend Luke Bryan, and I thought this was pretty classy. I had seen him in Allentown, Pennsylvania, not too far from where the Sands Bethlehem is. And it was a place called... Actually, I was... same younger cousin, and we got lost that night too. You know, I stopped going to concerts with her. Always is a mischief. But like that night, you know, it wasn't as big of a stadium like the Phillies or the Eagle Stadium is, and I'm sure same as where you saw them. So this was more just a basic stage, and then it had like kind of like a almost like a horseshoe kind of shape to it, and or an L shape to it. And there was a, you know, young guy there, so he was making a shout out for, you know, military veterans. And he saw the one young guy that was, you know, military veteran, and he goes, "I would like to do a shot with you right now." And the kid goes, "Well, I'd love to, but I'm only 20 years old." And he was there with his father. And Luke turns to the kid's father and goes, "Sir, would it be okay, you know, because you're basically his legal guardian, if I did a shot with your son?" And the guy's like, "You know, hey, man, he's serving our country. It would be an honor, you know, if you did a shot with him." And put two shots right there, and they toasted and they banged him.
Nice.
Old enough to serve, you're old enough to drink.
Yeah. You know, I thought, absolutely.
I mean, I came back from Vietnam, I was 19, still couldn't get a beer. So, what's wrong with that picture? Well, since getting on that again.
Yeah, I was at military school, and almost the whole time up to my senior year, I was not 21, but I knew the place to go to get beer under 21. It was funny because at Norwich, there was a place, we used to call it the Shady Jade. And it was a Chinese restaurant. And so we go to Virginia Military Institute on the exchange program, and they're like, "Come on, let's go to this place." And I forget the name of their place, but sure enough, it was like a half American, half Chinese restaurant. And they had American waitresses and everything, and they never ID'd us because they knew half of their clientele was underage. it was very close to campus, and a lot of cadets used to go there and drink, and it's big scorpion bowls, and, man, yeah. Yeah, I came back from one drunken episode at the Norwich one, the Norwich Shady Jade, and I had like an entire large order of chicken wings, and I had one too many scorpion bowls, and I got through the gates of campus. Like, you have to park outside the gates and then walk up to your barracks, and I left the entire large order of chicken wings and all the alcohol I drank in a giant pile in front of the gate, right outside one of the dormitories, and I literally heard people talking about this pile all around me at breakfast. Like, I wanted to be like, "That's me! I did that!" No, it was bad. Yeah, so... needless to say, I'm not a big fan of scorpion bowls anymore.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Anyway, Tony, maybe the Phillies are thinking that now that that guy in Boston had the most ridiculous first pitch you can have, hit the guy in the nuts.
That is, oh, I saw that. That was great.
You need to show them that you have the skill to get it over the plate or something.
Tom, did you see that?
Yes, that's why I'm laughing about it. That is something out of the Three Stooges.
Yeah.
That's gotta be. I mean, that's what you'd expect there.
You'll appreciate this. A few years ago, it was, you know, after the Phillies had their run of being, you know, a top, you know, dynamic team, and they were free falling back into the atrocious, you know, team that inhabited for like two stadiums or seasons at the stadium. I was watching a game one night and they're getting blown out like 13-1 or something, and the errors all over the place and pitchers getting lit up and all that. And I turned around and that Three Stooges movie that came out a couple years ago was on. I said, oh man, I enjoyed it, so I watched that. And then I had to go to Facebook to, you know, report my, you know, events of the evening. I said, well, I said, tonight I had a choice of watching TV. I could either watch the Phillies game or the Three Stooges movie. I said, the one was sophomoric, slapstick, bumbling comedy, and the other one was the Three Stooges.
Yeah, there you go.
But I'll tell you, man, the Phillies got a young kid. I saw him in I saw him in Clearwater this year. He was, spring training, and then he went to AAA. He led the AAA in homers. All of AAA baseball led them in homers. Had something like about 30. So they call him up in August. So he came up on August whatever. I think it was like August 10th. So he's been up what now? 5 weeks, maybe? He hit his 18th home run tonight.
Wow. Nice.
18 home runs in, I think, 33 or 34 games.
Wow.
It's fun to watch.
Yeah, all I got to say is forget baseball and go Patriots, right? No. Oh, man, they got spanked.
Well, you know, the Patriots actually helped me last week. They knocked out about 15 guys out of my last man standing pool.
Jeez, they got no luck this year. Definitely going to have an uphill battle to get it going. Because a lot of teams...
Yeah, which is only 1 week.
Yeah,
can I anoint my team as Super Bowl winners because we beat Washington?
A lot of teams have made some big improvements, and the Patriots have found themselves a step behind, I think. They got some injuries, too.
I made any New York Jets.
Yeah. I believe that. Some teams just don't give a shit, you know?
In my last man standing pool, I might pick against the Jets every week.
Yeah. I heard you won the $1 billion in that FanDuel thing. You had the perfect lineup, right?
Yeah, right. I didn't even win my own thing.
Yeah, that thing is like probably statistically impossible to win, but they probably did like $10 million worth of commercials on it.
You know, also like when they say like NCAA bracket.
Yeah. Anyway, before we get going tonight, I do have one big story in the UFC to discuss a little bit briefly. John Jones, the B sample, came back for the steroid, same steroid as the other one, so... He has been stripped of his light heavyweight title for a third time, and Daniel Cormier is once again the 205-pound champion. So, again, Daniel Cormier is champ by default. I don't know. I guess I'll keep reading here and see if he's facing any suspension from the UFC. He's already served a 1-year suspension, but this one could be at least 4 years. We'll see.
Yeah, that's going to be hard to come back from that. And, you know, supposedly this steroid is a very rare one. And, you know, he's still, I guess, trying to argue that cane and supplements thing that I can never find any of them myself. I don't know where you buy them at, but, you know, this whole cane and supplements, so someone must have... I think this may be the end of him.
Yeah. Turinabol. That's the substance that he failed the test for. I believe that's the same thing that the other guy, one of the heavyweights there, he had a situation where they invited him to a steak dinner in Russia, and he said that the steroid was in the steak, and I think that was the same one. So maybe he.
Where do you get steak like? Where do you get that stuff?
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
That'd be great to have that. Boy, I look
and
a little
there was
different.
A boxer,
you know,
who used that defense, too. Who, I mean, he didn't say that the guy drugged it. You know, the guy, it wasn't a Russia situation. It was in the United States. And I believe it was in New Mexico. So, you know, pretty close to John Jones's territory. But the guy literally said that they give the steroids to the cows before they slaughter them, and he had eaten those cows in the area, and that's how he got the contaminated blood from his sample. And this was a boxing match years ago. I believe it was a guy who fought Robert Guerrero, but I'm drawing a blank on the guy's name. But yeah, it happens. It happens, definitely.
And I imagine his father said, too bad.
That should be Brock Lesnar's excuse, you know, with his father running the cattle farm.
Yeah.
Hey, man, yeah, I ate some bad cattle. We'll see. Yeah, John Jones. No,
before I forget, you got to tell you guys this. I was at Walmart yesterday before this dinner I had to attend with that guy that used to train with Marciano. That's Rocky Marciano, Rich. I don't know if you ever heard of him.
Nope.
So I stopped at Walmart by my job because I was looking for something, and I saw a shirt there. Didn't have my size. I stopped at two other Walmarts before I went to this dinner, and it was the third and final birthday gift for myself to myself since Vegas fell through, and this one was a T-shirt with a picture of a man Rich personally met and declined his, you know, offer to be on our show, that being Michael Gerard Tyson. And it says, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth.
Yeah.
He declined my offer.
I don't know.
I believe that.
Huh? I don't know, man.
He laughed, too. That was the worst part.
Man, what do you say? I can't be anybody anymore. I can't be anybody.
Yeah. It was funny because, you know, he's such a, like, teddy bear now. And if you tried to do that meet and greet 10 years ago and asked him to do something he didn't want to do, he was one to snap right at reporters.
And yeah, right.
Some footage of him telling people off real bad. Never mind his opponents, just people trying to ask him questions. So I met him at a good time, I guess. Anyway. All right, guys. It's been fun.
All right, guys.
A lot to talk about next week. Go Triple G.
We fight this weekend, and like I said, I'm going to go Triple G in a very close but unanimous decision.
I'm going to say ninth round knockout. Gennady's going to knock out Canelo.
I'm with you, Rich. I think in later rounds, I think it's just going to be a war of attrition that Triple G is going to win just by outworking him. Well, we'll see what happens. This is what's fun.
Some guy early on when they announced this fight, I think it was like 2 weeks, maybe less than 2 weeks after they announced it, somebody was, you know, asking for people's thoughts on Facebook or somewhere, and I said, Gennady's going to break his ribs, you know. And, no, I didn't mean it literally, but, you know, he could. He has that power. So
yeah.
I think that's how it's going to start, and then Canelo already has kind of a hunched over style, but he's going to get kind of more hunched over, and he's going to leave his head wide open for the uppercuts and the hooks, and it's just going to take just a matter of time. He's going to get worn down. That's my psychic prediction. That's what my crystal ball says.
I'm with you on that one, bud. All right, guys, let's enjoy it. Lots to talk about next week, huh?
Yes. If I can get it done tomorrow night, I will.
That'll be great, Tony. We'll be looking forward to it.
Yes. All right, sounds good, gentlemen. Wonderful rest of your evening.
You too.
All right, guys. Bye. Yes.